Chapter 5, October 15th, Part 2. So, our attempt to boost the morale around the castle has sort of backfired. Well, not sort of. Totally. Mainly because our latest recruit has freaking terrified everyone. Baba Yaga has been walking around eyeing everyone and licking her lips like they were all pieces of fried chicken. The Pied Piper and Wendell barricaded themselves in one of the cabins. Puss in Boots darted underneath a shed and refused to come out. The Scarecrow burst into tears, ruining his face. He had to paint on brand new eyes and a mouth, which in my opinion makes him no less creepy than Baba Yaga. Bunny is trying to assure everyone that they are safe and that the old witch is a big part of the plan. I'm wondering what this plan is, because I feel like we're wandering in the dark. Anyway, now that the coven has been built, I guess it's my turn to do my part, leading everyone to their deaths. I did a head count of my troops to see what I'm working with, and our grand total is 24 people. We've got 2 old men, a beauty queen, a little boy with a harmonica, some circus bears, a man made out of hay, a bird, a cat wearing work boots, a feng shui consultant, and now a flesh-hungry witch and her walking house. And these people have the nerve to look at me like I'm going to let them down. Bunny says she's going to get me help, but she's asked for something in return. She wants us to keep our mouths shut about Atticus. She says she doesn't want to make things any more complicated, especially with Snow, who already keeps her mother at arm's length. We agreed, but in my opinion, Snow has a right to know about the man, and more importantly, she has a right to know what her mother did to protect him from her. I suppose Bunny is trying to find the right way to explain it all. Oh, and on a side note, Puck told my dad he was going to marry me. Worst day ever. That night, Sabrina and her sister slept in one of the fortress's cabins with Elvis. They pushed together 2 cots so they could sleep as they had been doing for years, side by side, and snuggled close to each other to fight off the room's many drafts. Elvis lay at the foot of the bed, eventually making his way between them and then entirely on the pillows. It was a fitful night for Sabrina, filled with terrible nightmares. In each dream, Mirror was strangling her and laughing. She woke several times, breathing hard and grasping at her throat. Daphne lay next to her, her little arms wrapped around the Book of Ever After. Elvis, who was usually as heavy of a sleeper as Daphne, snuggled up with Sabrina and licked her chin, but his attempts at comfort didn't help. "I heard your shouts," a voice said from the shadows, and Mr. Canis stepped forward. "I came to investigate." Sabrina nodded. "Bad dreams." "You have my sympathy," the old man said. "I've suffered all my life. I find meditation before bed to be the most effective." "What are you doing up so late?" "Trying to be useful," the old man said, then pointed at the Book of Ever After. "This camp is filled with people who are untrustworthy. Perhaps I should take the book for safekeeping."
"I'll talk to Daphne about it in the morning," Sabrina said. "She's convinced she's going to find something in it that will help."
"Very well,"
Mr. Canis said, and was soon gone. Sabrina lay still, listening to the wind and the forest and the world. Meditation might help, but right now what she needed was some air. She snatched an extra blanket from under the cots and wrapped it around her like a cloak, then stepped out into the frosty air. The moon hid behind storm clouds that turned its light dull and milky, and a wind brushed through leaves and branches. She wandered around the grounds without a destination, just content in her aloneness. Eventually, she came across Briar's grave. There, she spotted Uncle Jake sitting in his chair. She was happy he was back and wanted to rush to him and tell him that she loved him and that he wasn't alone in his grief, but she suddenly understood that, like herself, he probably wanted to be alone. She was about to creep away when she heard his voice. At first, she thought he was talking to himself, but then she realized he was talking to Briar. Sabrina listened as he talked about what he had seen in the forest that day.
the colors of trees, the crunch of his feet under leaves, the signs of animals preparing for winter, and the beauty of the long red sunset. But mostly he talked about how hard it was not to share those things with her firsthand. Before Sabrina knew it, she was wiping tears off her cheeks. "You got something to say, Sabrina?" Jake asked. Sabrina stepped into the light. "I didn't mean to spy. I couldn't sleep." Jake smiled. "I like to talk to her," he said, as he gestured to the grave. "I like to think she can hear me wherever she is. I tell her how much I miss her and how I'm going to avenge her." "Please don't do it," Sabrina said quietly. "I don't expect any of you to understand. If what I do makes me the bad guy, well, I'll have to live with it. But I can't live with letting it go." He scooped up his bow and arrows. "I only stopped by to say hello to her. I've got to get back to work." She followed him to the gate and watched as the drawbridge, recently repaired, lowered. Before he crossed the bridge, he turned to her. "I heard the news about the prophecy. I'd wish you luck, but these days I'm not sure the world is worth saving." Sabrina wasn't sure how to respond. Her instinct was to argue and give the man a pep talk, but at the same time she had to admit she often felt the same way. Life seemed to be mostly loss and pain and heartache. "It's a stupid prophecy," she said. "Two kids are really going to save the world?" "Save the people you love," Uncle Jake said. "Who cares about the rest of the world?" And then he was gone, leaving her alone with the murky moon. In the morning, Sabrina woke to a knock on her cabin door. When she opened it, she found Charming, Mr. Seven, and Mr. Canis standing in the doorway. "We need to talk," Charming said. "We've had a deserter."
"Who?"
"Puss in Boots," Mr. Canis said. "He slipped out early this morning." Daphne sat up in bed and rubbed her eyes.
"Why? Is it because of Baba Yaga?"
"We hope," Mr. Seven said, "though there's a chance he could have been a spy." Sabrina shook her head.
"The cat wasn't a spy, and it wasn't Baba Yaga. He was afraid Daphne and I were going to screw everything up."
Charming sighed. "He may just be the first. The mood around here is definitely dark. We can't afford to lose more, so you and your sister need to get out of your jammies and get to work."
"And what do you suggest we do?" Sabrina grumbled. "There's only 24 people in this army."
23 now, Daphne said.
"We're not talking about the army," Canis said. "Mr. Seven has another idea."
"Our people have been suffering for a long time. It's hard to be afraid all the time, especially when it looks like things just get worse and worse every day. We're going to throw a party," the little man said.
"What do you want us to do? Rent a bouncy castle and a cotton candy machine?" Sabrina asked.
"Actually, I was thinking we should have a wedding," Mr. Seven said.
"A wedding?" Sabrina repeated.
"How romantic," Daphne cried. She jumped up in bed and clapped happily.
Seven smiled. "A surprise wedding. One where the bride doesn't know she's getting married until she walks down the aisle. We need your help."
When Sabrina looked over, Daphne was already biting hard on her palm. Sabrina couldn't be sure if the wedding would boost morale, but she was happy with the effect it was having on her. Keeping it a secret tapped into an old familiar feeling, being sneaky. Not so long ago, Sabrina was known as the Queen of the Sneaks. She had earned the title from her year in foster care. She knew how to open a creaky window without making a sound. She knew how to slink across a room without stepping on a loose floorboard. She knew how to crawl out onto a roof, shimmy down a trellis, and tiptoe past a watchdog without making a peep. Keeping the wedding plans from the eyes and ears of Morgan Le Fay reminded her that she wasn't a complete loser. She had skills, occasionally illegal skills, but skills nonetheless, and she was determined to make the most of them. In the shadows and in whispered conversations, she gave everyone a job.
flowers, music, food, and the most important job of all, keeping the bride busy until everything was ready. Since the castle was nearly finished, its rooms also needed to be decorated. Morgan had a simple spell for creating furniture from thin air, and Sabrina knew exactly who to team her up with. Goldilocks. Goldie had an eye for interior design. She also had an obsession with things being just right. Under her direction, Morgan would be busy all day. And it worked. All the pressure and frustration of the prophecy was pushed aside, and the tiny community leaped headfirst into planning and preparation. It was the first time Sabrina had seen everyone smiling since her arrival. She even caught Pinocchio humming the wedding march as he and Geppetto built a platform for the couple to stand upon when they exchanged their vows.
"A wedding under the stars is a lovely idea, Sabrina," Snow said, as the two stood back and admired the yard.
"Your boyfriend gave me a lot of the ideas," Sabrina said. "He's quite the romantic."
"I've always thought so," Snow said, as she gazed lovingly at Charming,
who was working with Nurse Spratt to create some sort of seating chart.
"I just hope he saves some for our wedding."
"Has he asked?" Sabrina said.
Snow smiled.
"He will, or I will, if I get tired of waiting. I hope it's half as nice as this one."
Wildflowers lined the path to two beautiful wooden arches, interwoven with roses and white lilies. Several rows of chairs, each wrapped in more of the flowers, awaited guests. Mallowbarb and Buzzflower hovered overhead on their wide insect wings. They showered the space with magical glitter, making the scene appear otherworldly. It was enough to take Sabrina's breath away. She hoped Morgan would feel the same.
"Well, I better get ready. I didn't exactly pack for a formal engagement,"
Mr. Seven said nervously.
"I hope my bride doesn't hate my sneakers and blue jeans."
Sabrina looked down at herself and gasped. She was a mess. She couldn't wear her ratty hooded sweatshirt and grungy shoes to a wedding. She rushed into the cabin that housed the magic mirror and darted into the Hall of Wonders. On the floor of her room was a stack of dirty clothes. She sorted through it, desperate to find anything that could be described as an outfit. All that she had managed to save from Granny's demolished house were three pairs of pants, an oven mitt, a moth-eaten sweater, and eight shoes, none of which matched another. Desperate, she reached for her father's Red Hot Chili Peppers concert shirt from 1990. She slipped it on, then ran into the mirror room to see how she looked. There was a huge green stain on it from one of Puck's pranks. It was ruined. Sabrina was a card-carrying member of the Tomboys Club, but this particular injustice stung. It wasn't like she needed a pretty dress or fancy shoes. She just wanted a declaration to the world that things weren't that bad. If she could have her hair done and wash her face and put on a necklace and show up to a wedding during a war, then the battle hadn't beaten them. A simple ribbon in her hair would have done it. Evidence that there were still very normal things in this abnormal world, and someday those normal things would return. But she couldn't win this fight. She couldn't even find a clean t-shirt. Sabrina wandered over to the Council of Mirrors for some company.
"No one has anything nice to wear, honey," Fanny said, as she and the other guardians appeared in their mirrors.
"I know. I still want to try," she said.
"For Puck?" Donovan asked, then mimed some exaggerated kissing. Sabrina frowned.
"No, not for Puck. Who cares what he thinks?"
"Don't tease the girl, Donovan,"
Arden chided. Sabrina buried her face in her hands while the mirrors tried to console her.
"Everything is a mess."
As she sobbed, she felt a hand in hers and sniffed.
"I'm okay, Daphne."
"No, you're not," a voice replied.
But it wasn't Daphne. It was Red.
"None of us are okay."
Red's attempt to comfort her took Sabrina off guard. Of all the people in the Grimm family, Sabrina had been the most indifferent to the little girl. It was hard to forget that Red had tried to hurt her family, even if she had been under the control of an evil force. Sabrina knew it wasn't fair to hold a grudge, but there was a wall around her heart nonetheless.
"Where's Daphne?" she asked. "She's busy with Morgan's flowers. You know how she bites her palm when she's excited. I thought she was going to chew her hand off when Mr. Seven asked her to be the flower girl."
Red took out a brush and went to work untangling Sabrina's blonde bird's nest of hair.
"She put me on hair duty."
Sabrina forced herself to let the little girl work while she brushed some crusty residue off of her pants.
"You're going to be fine," Red continued. "Of all of us, you'll be fine."
"What makes you think so?" Sabrina said.
"Because you're brave. That's your gift."
"My gift?" Sabrina laughed.
"Yes. Your dad is the one who watches over everyone. Your mom is the leader. Your sister is the smile maker. And you're the brave one. You just jump in and fight. Mr. Canis says he's never seen you run."
"Mr. Canis hasn't been paying attention. Listen, if anything, my gift is being the stupid one. I get into a lot of trouble because of my bravery. Every time I turn around, someone has to save my butt."
"You do your fair share of butt-saving, too," Red giggled. "We all need saving sometimes."
"Did Mr. Canis say that, too?" Sabrina asked.
"No, I say that," Red said. "Look at Mr. Canis. These days he's feeling old and useless. He doesn't feel like he has a purpose, so I'm saving him."
"How?"
"By making him my father."
"So maybe that's your gift," Sabrina said.
"How do you suppose?"
"You can make even the grouchiest person care about another," Sabrina said. She looked into one of the mirrors and spotted Red's smile. The little girl set down the brush.
"I did the best I could. Not as good as Daphne, but..."
"Looking good,"
Reggie said, when Sabrina studied herself in his reflection. Red turned to go, but Sabrina took her hand.
"Want me to comb your hair?"
she asked. Red smiled.
"I would love that."
Sabrina slinked into the courtyard, hoping no one would notice her clothes. She found a seat next to Henry and Veronica. Baby Basil was slumbering in his mother's arms. Veronica studied her son's beautiful face. The only time the little boy would sit still for her was when he was asleep, and Veronica took full advantage of the time to worship her cherub.
"You look, lovely," Henry said, when Sabrina sat down next to him.
"Nice try, Dad," Sabrina replied.
She turned in her seat to check out the other guests. Fanny was right. Most were dressed in the best clothes they had, which turned out to be nothing more than t-shirts and sneakers. Nurse Sprat and Snow White had stolen flowers from their chairs and woven them in their hair. Even Charming had a rose pinned to his shirt. Everyone had done the best they could. Sabrina took a flower from her chair and twirled the stem around her ear. It was better than nothing.
"He's been trained well, honey," Veronica said. "Don't worry about it. We're all a wreck. The bride is wearing farmer's overalls."
"Has she got any clue?" Henry asked.
Sabrina grinned. "Not one."
Puck dropped clumsily out of the sky into the chair next to her.
"Where have you been?"
Puck had a dead skunk in his hand.
"Shopping for the happy couple. I didn't check the registry, but I'm sure they don't have one of these."
"You got them roadkill as a wedding present?" Henry asked. Puck seemed confused.
"It's a wedding? Aren't you supposed to send the couple off with things they'll need for their home? Which reminds me, when your daughter and I get married, it's customary in the fairy world for the groom and the father-in-law to challenge each other in a fight to the death. Glad to see I'll have a worthy contender. It's very disappointing when the bride's dad gets killed right away. It can totally kill the mood of a reception."
"Has anyone seen Uncle Jake today?"
Sabrina asked, to change the subject.
"I don't think he's in the mood for a wedding," Veronica said.
The Pied Piper and his son stood at the front of the audience with their instruments in hand. They played an up-tempo march, and the crowd stood to greet the wedding party. Daphne was the first to appear,
and Sabrina's jaw hit the floor. The little girl was dressed in a beautiful silk dress lined with delicate lace. Her shoes were spotless, and her hair was clean and flawless. She strolled to the front of the crowd, sprinkling rose petals behind her. And when she got to the platform, she reached into her flower basket and removed the star-tipped fairy godmother wand.
"Attention, everyone," Daphne said. "I thought and thought about what kind of gift I could give the happy couple, and I hope you don't mind, but this is what I came up with."
Daphne flicked her wrist, and there was a loud pop. The air filled with a purple mist. When it lifted, Sabrina looked down at herself. Her jeans and t-shirt were gone, replaced with a soft pink gown and white shoes. Pearls draped her neck, and her face and hands were scrubbed clean and fresh. Sabrina glanced around the courtyard. Everyone was dressed just as beautifully. Even her father's four-day beard was gone.
"Wow," Puck said.
Sabrina turned to Puck, hoping for a compliment, but the boy fairy was looking down at himself. He was wearing a smart black tuxedo with a black tie. His hair was shiny and combed. There wasn't a single fly buzzing around his head, and he had the pleasant aroma of soap about him.
"This suit is going to look great when I roll in those deer droppings I found by the front gate."
Sabrina sighed and told herself she should have known better.
"Enjoy the clothes while they last, 'cause at midnight we all go back to being slobs," Daphne said.
Everyone laughed and broke into applause as Mr. Seven appeared in a blue tuxedo, top hat, and tails. He thanked everyone for coming. He pointed to Sabrina, thanking her for all her hard work, and also thanked Daphne for the fancy suit, but he insisted the crowd hadn't seen anything yet. He pointed to the back of the courtyard, and there was Morgan Le Fay. Her dress was the color of vanilla cream, and it was embroidered with seed pearls and tiny crystals. The dress's train spread behind her for several yards, and her jet-black hair was woven with little white daisies. She was the most beautiful bride Sabrina had ever seen.
"She's breathtaking," Veronica whispered.
By her side was her son, Mordred, who, through the help of magic or his own effort, had a perfectly combed head of hair. He grinned nearly as wide as his mother. He led her to the arches where he placed his mother's hands into Seven's. That was when the scarecrow approached the couple. He greeted everyone with a broad smile on his burlap face.
"Thank you for coming to this most wonderful of events. As the former Emperor of Oz, I have the privilege and honor to officiate this ceremony."
The Scarecrow invited the crowd to join him in a prayer for the happy couple. Then, Seven and Morgan spoke of their brief but intense love and how fate had finally brought them together. Morgan cried as she promised her life to Seven. Mr. Seven did the same, and when the Scarecrow pronounced them man and wife, Morgan planted the biggest kiss on the little man that Sabrina had ever seen. Confetti showered down on the newlyweds, and music floated over the crowd. There was much cheering and shaking of hands, and kissing of the bride.
"You're a lucky man," Geppetto said to the groom.
"I'm the lucky one," Morgan cried, swooping the little man into her arms for another kiss.
And then Charming called for everyone's attention. He had a glass of champagne in his hand, and Sabrina watched as several trays of the bubbly stuff magically floated through the crowd.
"Just one more interruption, folks. This morning, Mr. Seven came to me and asked me to be the best man at this wedding. For some strange reason, he thought a wedding could be planned in one day."
Everyone smiled knowingly.
"He also believed, for some reason, that I enjoy being in front of a crowd."
Everyone roared with laughter.
"Well, let me tell you, this party has been incredibly troublesome. After all, we're only trying to build a castle, raise an army, and prepare for a war. Mr. Seven and his bride have been a terrible inconvenience."
Suddenly, the laughter was gone. Sabrina was incredulous. Charming had a history of being selfish, but was he really going to grouse during a wedding?
But that is love, isn't it? He continued. It's terribly inconvenient. It sweeps you up and steals your attention and slows down your work. Our labours fall behind, our friends report us missing, and everything comes to a screeching halt. Everything, that is. Except what truly matters in this life. True love. We've all been there. We know the feelings. So, when we see it in a friend, a dear, dear friend, we throw down our work and we celebrate. We rejoice. We raise a glass. Because when we recognize it in the hearts of friends, it reminds us of how important it is in our own. Mr. Seven, you are, and always have been, my companion and friend. You have made me a better man, and almost on a daily basis, you have reminded me that I too need to celebrate the love in my life. Everyone turned to Snow. Her face was rosy red, and she was grinning wide. Charming held up his glass. So, my friends, in this lovely courtyard, let us raise a glass and celebrate the maddening, all-consuming, time-killing, terribly inconvenient magic called love. The crowd raised their glasses and drank, then burst into rousing applause. Together, the crowd cleared the chairs away, and there was dancing and singing and food. Where the feast came from, Sabrina could hardly guess, but somehow these runaways and refugees had prepared a spread for 100 people. In the midst of the party, Mr. Hamlin found himself a guitar, and his son Wendell blew on his harmonica. Sabrina watched Charming whisper something into Snow's ear that made her giggle. She paid for the laugh with a kiss. Henry and Veronica waltzed around the courtyard, holding sleeping Basil between them. Even Red dragged Mr. Canis onto the dance floor for a spin. Sabrina couldn't help but get swept up in it all. The dread of the last few months and the threat of tomorrow were pushed into a corner of her mind. As she watched the revelers, it dawned on her that the wedding was more than a party for two people coming together as one, but rather a celebration of life and its possibilities, even in the midst of madness. I guess we're supposed to dance, Puck said, suddenly appearing beside her. Do you know how to dance? Puck rolled his eyes. I'm royalty. That's all we ever do. He took her by the hand and taught her an elaborate dance that seemed to be part waltz, part square dance. It was more theatrical than what she thought of as dancing, and it drew way more attention than she wanted. But soon the entire gathering was mimicking their every step. She pushed her embarrassment aside and surrendered to the fun of it. She couldn't even be mad at Puck for not noticing her dress. As the night marched onward, the crowd began to thin. People drifted off to their cabins and crawled into bed. The new Mr. and Mrs. Seven thanked everyone profusely until they were practically pushed into their honeymoon suite, the only finished and furnished room in the castle. Veronica carried Basil, and Henry carried Daphne, both asleep, back to their beds. Soon, the only people left were Geppetto, Pinocchio, Puck, and Sabrina. Sabrina was too excited from the night's events to go to bed, so she offered to clean up the mess, and the other three joined her, even Pinocchio, though he did do quite a bit of grumbling. As they stacked chairs and picked up trash, Sabrina could still hear the music in her ears, beckoning her to spin in circles. Geppetto decided to leave the flowers where they were as a reminder to everyone of the happy time they had shared, then said goodnight, promising his son that tomorrow would be another busy day. Pinocchio groaned as he followed his father back to their cabin. And then Sabrina was enveloped in a glowing light. When it was gone, she looked down and saw that her beautiful dress was no more. She was back to being filthy. Her hair was a mess, and she smelled. Puck's fancy suit was gone as well. It must be midnight, Sabrina said.
Thank goodness, Puck said. I don't enjoy the feeling of being clean.
Sabrina rolled her eyes, but didn't move. Instead, she looked up at the moon hanging over the yard.
So?
Puck said.
So?
Nice party, he said. It reminded me of Sven the Soul Eater's 13th wedding. Or was that the 14th? It's hard to say. He kept eating his wives. Still, I did think it was strange there wasn't a forest fire. I've never been to a wedding that didn't have some kind of uncontrollable devastation. Sabrina wished he would just stop talking. He was going to ruin the night with some snarky insult. She just knew it. By the way, when I said wow, I was looking at you, Puck said. Sabrina's face lit up in a grin. Who was this boy? He could drive her crazy with his pranks and taunts, but then when she least expected, he could be the sweetest and most thoughtful person in the world. He was maddening and impossible to understand, but at that moment he was awfully cute, and she thought she might like to kiss him, but couldn't decide. The moment was all too perfect. Asking for more would be pressing her luck, but then again...
Kind of late, isn't it?
Her father said, appearing from the shadows.
Dad!
Sabrina cried. She could have died from embarrassment. Puck rolled his eyes.
All right, smell you later, he said.
He was in the air instantly, flying off to wherever he slept.
Get to bed, Brina,
Henry said, as she turned back toward his cabin. We're going to put an end to this war tomorrow. Sabrina slipped into her room and found Daphne big-eyed and frantic.
Have you seen it? She asked. Seen what? The Book of Ever After. It's been stolen.